So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to Trending. It is great to be with you on this Tuesday. Coming up, joining me will be Jim O'Day, the Executive Director of Integrity Restored, helping people who are struggling with a pornography addiction as well as their loved ones. We'll be discussing two very important topics today. One of them will have to do with how really is there a balance today in terms of protecting your kids in a world where so many other people and entities are determining what your kids see and view day to day. So ultimately, the idea is why you must lead in protecting your own children, especially after this recent scandal coming out of the United Nations surrounding the Children's Fund and funding and programs worldwide. We'll also discuss how to know the difference between healthy versus unhealthy intimacy in a world of pornography, especially from the perspective of marriage. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. So I was at Mass the other day, and my baby girl, we're at daily Mass, and she just loves the acoustics in the church. Really loves it, especially when the Alleluia comes. Everyone else is singing. Why can't she sing too? And she starts singing the Alleluia very loudly, so much so that the priest, as he's singing the Alleluia, getting ready for the gospel, looks over at my baby girl and starts laughing. And then sure enough, she's named in the homily as we get started. And he starts talking about how wonderful her Alleluia was. Oh dear, here we go. Sometimes, you know, the acoustics in the church just really are not friendly towards children crying. I'll just say that. And they really know that they are loud and they echo and they want to be louder. But at the same time, you know, the funny thing is I've had a lot of friends who, when they've converted to Catholicism or have been in a Catholic church, they've commented over and over again that they love that the Catholic church doesn't emphasize the cry room as often. In fact, many of the churches don't have cry rooms, and many churches don't even offer childcare, which is a little bit more common among our Protestant brothers and sisters. They don't necessarily bring their kids to their liturgy. And so it brings me to this question. I want to hear from you, your sage advice and wisdom. If you have well-behaved children in church, what did you do to help your babies and your kids behave well? The number is 1-888-914-9149. And I put that caveat, if you have well-behaved kids, what's your trick? What's your secret? How did you make it happen? What was the transition? You can give us a call. Again, the number is 1-888-914-9149. We're looking for sage wisdom, whether you're currently in the kid run at Mass or whether you've been there and have done that. You can also comment on my Instagram. You can find me at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. I put up a question box earlier today where you can comment. We've actually received a lot of comments with everything from Cheerios and food to toys only at Mass. These are the responses that we are receiving leading into this topic. And I think it's important for us to discuss, and I'm going to discuss it a little bit now and then we'll come back. One of the challenges I personally have had over the years, just seeing babies in and out of Mass and kids, is the food thing. Like, is it really appropriate for the kids to be chowing down on Cheetos and Cheerios during Mass? And even the animal crackers. Is it good to just pacify the kid, or is it important to work on them and their behavior during Mass? Some of the responses we've already received, a lot of it has been focused on food. Now, two perspectives. One perspective, making sure that your kid is well fed before church. We don't want a hangry child when we attend Mass. Why would we want to be hangry? Why would we make them hangry? They don't have to observe that fast leading into Mass. We do. The other perspective, so one is feeding the kids beforehand. The next is waiting. Waiting for those kids and allowing them to have those snacks during church so they have their meal. I don't know, maybe you break open the sandwich, the picnic basket, and we do put out all the fixings. This is, I think, the fun challenge that I want to hear your thoughts on. Again, the number's 1-888-914-9149. We'll be taking your sage wisdom throughout the show. I want to take a caller now. We're going to take Paul from Wheeler, Illinois. Paul, welcome to Trending. What are your thoughts on helping kids behave in mass?
Thank you. I don't know if it's so much the sage wisdom as it's just an observation that when the children are able to see authentic Catholicism, both in the architecture and in the liturgical music, that they respond to that even more so than they do to their own parents.
Interesting. So you're saying a reverent mass makes the difference?
A reverent mass, well, not just the mass, not just the liturgy, of course, that's extremely important, but being able to soak up every aspect of Catholicism, from the architecture to the liturgy to the liturgical music and basically the artwork, can really direct their attention toward vertically towards God.
Yeah, that's a great perspective. And I think that also that's another thing in that it also, I think, starts to become age appropriate, where you can start, you know, to point out, you know, Jesus on the crucifix and, you know, look at Mother Mary and the images and the icons. But that also takes a development with age as well. And what's awesome is that, Paul, you really just pointed to something so important, and that is that all of the mass is meant to take up all of our senses. God accommodates us in our human dimension, feeling, taste, touch, smell. All of these are implored during mass, from the incense to the Eucharist, our Lord truly giving himself in his presence, body, blood, soul, and divinity. Let's receive a little more response here. Thank you, Paul from Illinois. Lisa from California is calling, and she says, food is the way. Lisa, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with that. I sit them before church, but I didn't give them too high sugar, like, you know, milk or cereal. Usually that makes them hyper and they cannot sit still.
Very good. So good, nutritious food that doesn't give them energy to be bouncing off the pews, under the kneelers, and in the neighbor's pew before they run down the aisle. Christy from Las Vegas has a comment as well from her perspective on how she's gotten children to behave during Mass. Welcome to Trending. What's your idea, Christy, that's worked for your family?
So when my kids were smaller, like toddlers and younger, we would sit in the front row. We'd come early to Mass and sit in the front row. That way they could see everything. And I think they were more embarrassed to yell out and act up if they were sort of the center of attention.
Yeah, for them to be right there in the front. You know, I've actually heard a lot of people who have said, you know what, we're not going to go with the food. We're going to be gentle on the toys and really try not to do any toys, depending, you know, on the age, and try to help them to understand you behave in church. And I actually get, people have said this before, Christy, it's harder to get a kid to behave in church when you're far in the back, when all they see is butts. But when they're close to the front, they can actually see what's happening.
Yes. And it worked for us. They were well-behaved children in church.
Now, did you have toys and food at the same time?
We did not bring food into church. I think we would bring like soft books maybe, but that was it.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a hard one for me. The food one, I get, you know, people either side, you know, one, you don't want your kid to be a terrorist, as my good friend Chris Mueller once said during church. But at the same time, you know, where's the balance of what you bring? You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. If you have a comment, a way to get your kid, a baby, to behave at church, I'd love to hear from you. The number's 1-888-914-9149. You're listening to Trending with Timory. Joining me in just a little bit here will be Jim O'Day, the Executive Director of Integrity Restored. We're going to be discussing how to have healthy intimacy in a world that is absolutely ravaged by pornography, and specifically marriages, because often we talk about the impact of pornography on families, on children, but not how it impacts intimacy in marriage. So joining me now, the Executive Director of Integrity Restored, helping people who are struggling with a pornography addiction, is Jim O'Day.
Hey, Timory, how are you? Such a pleasure to be on again.
It's great to have you back with us, Jim. I love this chart that you sent over. Very, very insightful. Really emphasizing the difference between healthy versus unhealthy intimacy. The chart, and I posted it on social media, on Instagram, comes from The Porn Trap, The Essential Guide to Overcoming Problems Caused by Pornography. Let's break this down. How have you seen this in your work, specifically with married people, that porn's been a real killer in terms of having healthy intimacy?
Yeah, well, the first thing I want to say is the big mistake we make as human beings is when we think of intimacy, we think immediately of physical intimacy. But that's only one part of it. Intimacy actually starts at the breakfast table, not in the bedroom. And people need to realize that. And so really good intimacy, healthy intimacy, is going to be all based in communication. And there was a psychologist in 1992, Dr. Hunter, said that healthy physical intimacy agrees with a person's values. It's respectful of oneself and others. It's honest. And both partners feel safe and free to choose. In that way, it deepens intimacy and joy. And what happens in a pornified culture is that gets thrown out the window because it's all about oneself. It's all about using as opposed to caring. It's about doing as opposed to sharing. And I think that really makes a big difference, Timory, particularly in marriages today that so many are struggling with one spouse or another having difficulties with porn addiction from a very young age, the act of physical intimacy becomes just visual.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Performance.
And I think that last word you just said, performance, really hits a nail on the head. It's become a show. It's become just pure entertainment. And this is what's so sad is we hear stories about young girls who are feeling pressured by their boyfriends to perform and do different things. But what's happening is we don't discuss how that's impacting marriages as well and how intimacy has to begin, as you said, far before any sort of physical intimacy. I mean, just as in a dating relationship, intimacy of persons, intimacy of the mind, of the soul, occurs before any sort of bodily intimacy, the unitive act. And I think that that's so important that we don't forget that once we are then in marriages and that we continue to hold that as the status quo as challenges arise in marriage with this vast exposure to pornography.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the real thing that happens with pornography is even though we may intellectually understand that what we're watching on the screen is acting, our brains don't. The brain doesn't understand that. And so the act of physical intimacy then becomes separated from communication, from love, from emotional connection. And it just becomes something that is for my pleasure individually. And that's really devastating to marriages.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we've been talking a lot this week about how we're leading in a mindset, one, of a hedonist society where everything has to do with pleasure. Another is a perspective of a relativistic society where everything is I define my truth, you define your truth. And then the final, really three, I think I said two, three is that this emoting culture where we define everything according to how I feel. And pornography just kicks right into this threefold attitude where ultimately the heart of it is me, myself, and I.
Absolutely. It's immediate impulse gratification. That's it. And, you know, real intimacy, lasting intimacy, is about honesty and trust and reflecting both partners' values. And unfortunately, pornography takes away from all that. You know, you said something interesting when you were talking about children at Mass and the gentleman's comment. Physical intimacy is the same. It requires all of our senses. But we need to recognize that pornography is just using one of those senses. It's just using the visual stimulation. Mm-hmm. It takes everything else out of it. And so then, you know, ultimately all these people are left dissatisfied.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I keep bringing this back to the perspective of, you know, what does the church teach about our vows? Well, one of the fundamental dimensions of the vow of marriage is fidelity, that idea of permanence and fidelity. And permanence and fidelity is brought into question when we live a life settled on one sense, that visual sense of intimacy. You know, I keep thinking about this phrase that, you know, it used to be that people would refer to having sex as making love. And it's almost as if we've watered it down and we just talk so blasé-ly about sex rather than discussing that it's an act of love. It's a total gift of self. And that this goes beyond the pornographic approach in intimacy.
Oh, completely. I mean, when you think about what, and here's the other thing. People need to remember, God is the one who invented sex. He invented it for us. Because he knew that we needed that connection, that expression, that physical expression of love. And yet now we've broken it down to its most base component, and then we wonder why we're not happy, why we're not satisfied. Well, because we're not approaching intimacy the way God intended. With care, with love, with communication. Now, that can be a really tough one for a lot of people in marriage. Communication about sex is a hard thing. Nobody teaches us that, right? You don't learn that. But if you trust each other and you love each other and you have fidelity to one another, you can talk about it.
Yeah. You are able to have a conversation. I think this is where the complementarity comes back into play, is that we're different as men and women. And so being able to have those conversations, have those boundaries, you know, emphasize when you're feeling used or uncomfortable or don't like something. I think that that's very important and simple, yet the world says, no, do anything to please the other person and please yourself rather than having this idea of giving yourself. And so I think one of the big, things to do to help is emphasizing the need for discussing boundaries, because with this pornified culture, I think boundary is one of the big things that's gone out the window, and that's where communication comes into play.
Absolutely. And you know, we need to be comfortable enough with each other to talk about our desires and what we like, but also what we don't like. And that's really important, that When a couple is married and in love and making love to each other, it should be about giving yourself to the other partner, but never at the cost of doing something that revolts you or you don't want to do. It should never be that.
Let's talk about a few of these things from this awesome graphic that you sent over. You posted it on Instagram. On the porn-related youth perspective, it says sex is separate from love, versus in the context of healthy sex, it says sex is an expression of love. And I like how it doesn't reduce love to just intimacy, but it's only an expression of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's really important, because one of the things, I've been married 32 years, you know, you go through a lot of changes in physical intimacy throughout a 32-year marriage. There's sickness at times, there's pregnancy, there's young children, there's older children who drive you nuts too. There's a lot of ups and downs in intimacy, but that doesn't mean there needs to be ups and downs in love, because physical intimacy is only one aspect of that.
Let's discuss a little bit from the perspective of St. John Paul II. Prior to becoming Pope, known as Cardinal Wojtyla, he would talk specifically in Love and Responsibility about the problem with pornography isn't that it shows too much, but that it shows too little. And he talks often about how this idea really points to us better understanding that the human person is someone that should only be loved, should never be used as a means to one's end to get what you want, but should be an end, something sought after in and of themselves. They're an end, not a means to finding the end, the desire that we've wanted. And I think that this approach of Cardinal Wojtyla, St. John Paul II, is so important for us to keep at the forethought of our engagements with other people with regard to intimacy, dating, and relationships.
Well, and I think that one statement where St. John Paul talked about pornography doesn't show too much, it shows too little, is so insightful. Because often when we think of pornography, we think, oh, I can't believe they're showing all that. But they're showing just the tip of the iceberg. They're not showing anything that is true intimacy. They're focused only on the visual stimulation. And that is not what we crave, what we desire in our souls as human beings, the way God created us. The intimacy has to be much deeper than that. And so I think he was really a prophet almost when it came to theology of the body.
That's Jim O'Day, the executive director of Integrity Restored, helping those struggling with a pornography addiction or their loved ones. Check out integrityrestored.com. I'll be right back here on Relevant Radio. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. And we're going to be discussing why you are the primary person responsible for protecting your kid in the midst of the world we live in today. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
We'd love to hear from you. We're taking calls. How did you get your babies to behave in mass? Numbers 1-888-914-9149. We're looking for sage wisdom from those who had well-behaved children. Joining me now is the executive director of Integrity Restored, helping those who are struggling with pornography addiction as well as their loved ones. Jim, I've been meaning to talk about this UNICEF scandal. United Nations Children's Fund truly has done something shocking. Here they are, responsible, having to do with education and children worldwide. In fact, we just re-upped our commitment, that is the United States, to the United Nations Children Fund with an additional $300 million in funding. And this falls right on the heels of UNICEF releasing a report stating that pornography, you know, just doesn't really impact kids. No big deal. They say they're not upset, they're not unhappy. And so they really downplay and ignore any issue with regard to pornography. I want to hear your initial reaction, then I want to discuss specifically some of their comments.
Sure. So, first of all, it doesn't surprise me, and that's really unfortunate, but it's true. You know, all they would have to do is pay attention to the myriad of brain science studies about the effect of pornography. And they couldn't say that. You know, the World Health Organization even recently came out and recognized gaming as an addiction. Now, they didn't officially recognize pornography yet as an addiction, but they recognized gaming because the same areas of the brain are impacted. So there's the science behind it. Secondly, there's the social aspect. We know that pornography, viewing, usage, production fuels sex trafficking, and it often fuels child sex trafficking.
You know,
they know those numbers.
Yeah, they do know those numbers. And Jim, you have the data behind you. The child pornography industry has been for a number of years now the largest and fastest growing industry with regard to pornography. And to just put a little context, because I remember, you know, years ago people tried to deny that pornography addiction was an addiction, but even medical professionals have come to terms with acknowledging that everything from addiction having to do with gambling to pornography to gaming, that is, those things that aren't something that you physically consume and ingest into your body can actually be addictions, behavioral addictions. And they're saying they're almost even worse because you're the one creating the drug and the chemical cocktail within your brain out of a response to an external thing you're engaging with. And so that's part of the reason why the medical professional didn't really know what to do with this at first, because it had so much to do with this in-depth brain science and reaction.
Yeah, but the neuroscience has come so far, Timory, that we just know so much now about the brain chemicals that are being produced in ridiculous amounts that God never intended when we're consuming pornography or gambling or gaming. We can see it in an MRI. We know what's happening.
So for those who don't know this, what's happening in the brain is when you look at pornography, you get accustomed to a certain type of pornography and you need a harder hit of dopamine. You need a harder intensity of pleasure because you get used to it. And so you go for more and more intense, from photos to more interactive videos to unique and eclectic types of pornography, all the way to what, Jim, what we're seeing is people are turning to child pornography. So how is it that we've gone so far with, let's say, an 8-year-old looking to porn, now that 8-year-old's 28 years old and looking at child pornography? Can you explain that jump?
So, yes, and I think there's a couple reasons for it, all very frightening. One, the way the brain works is when we keep having these dopamine rushes, the brain knows that's not right. So it starts to shut off dopamine receptors. So then we don't feel that happy high, that euphoria, that good feeling that we're chasing. So what do we have to do then? We have to find something new, something more to get back to that same baseline level. Just like with drug or alcohol abuse, you develop a tolerance. The same thing happens here. So you have the tolerance factor. Then you also have a really unique phenomenon that when that child is hypersexualized at a young age, 8, 9, 10 years old, at some point, they're going to want to go back to that feeling because that was the strongest feeling. That's what their brain remembers, is, wow, that was such a rush. Hmm. And then they're going to be looking at child pornography because that puts them back in the same time frame as when they were sexualized.
Wow, I didn't know that connection. So they're associating their first exposure to pornography as a child to what they themselves are wanting to re-experience?
Yes, very frightening.
Wow, so it's not just a matter of wanting something more intense and shocking, but it's actually going back to what they themselves experienced as a kid. So there's a twofold reason for why child pornography is one of the largest growing industries in the world right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And the, you know, the trauma that that child felt, even if it was exciting and arousing and their curiosity was really piqued, ladies and gentlemen, it was still a trauma. That kid shouldn't have been seeing that.
Mm-hmm. Whether they knew that they shouldn't see it or not, it was still a trauma.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And so if that trauma has never been healed, if that trauma has never been resolved, yes, they're going to go back to it.
And this is why we shouldn't just laugh off a child being exposed to pornography, whether it's once or it's repetitive. You know, and that's why it's unacceptable, Jim, when UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund, comments and says that most kids who see porn were either not upset or not unhappy. And that's what gives them the green light to not think that pornography is a big deal. But I'm sorry, I didn't know that pornography only had to do with a child's emotion of being upset or unhappy. No, this has to do with actions and choices that kids will then make as a result of this exposure. That's what this is about in terms of how they view themselves and how they view others. It has nothing to do with whether or not they're upset or unhappy.
Well, and that statement infuriates me. And I'll tell you why. I have spoken to enough kids who've been exposed to pornography. Their shame, even if they don't really know what they were looking at, they have shame about it. Mm. And so, of course, if some doctor or therapist or UN worker is asking them, well, what'd you think about that? They're going to say, nothing. How'd it make you feel? Okay. They're not going to engage because they're shocked, they're scared, they're curious. There are all these things that they don't know how to express.
So what can people do, Jim? You know, whether it's their kid who's already been exposed to pornography or it's preventing pornography exposure to begin with, what is kind of your multiple prong approach to this?
Mm. The first thing, and I think it just goes without saying, right? Communication, communication, communication. For the parents, this cannot be a one-and-done conversation. And in today's world, it certainly can't be, well, don't look at it because it's a sin. Because the children don't really believe that. They think it's so normal today. So you have to know that's the world your kid is growing up with. And so you need to talk to them about it, and you need to educate yourself on the science of the addiction, because the kids respond to the science. So you need to have regular conversations. You need to get every resource you can find. On the Integrity Restored website, we have a great product called Wonderfully Made Babies for kids communion age and younger. There's another resource out there, we've talked about it on the show before, called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. Excellent resource.
Yes.
We have another book on our website called Plunging Pornography, a Catholic bathroom book for teens. And that's for little older kids. It's an awesome resource. Then you need to put in place technology. Technology is what is getting the kids. Well, we can use it to protect our kids too. And there you can get products like Covenant Eyes or Net Nanny and really be that involved parent. But the biggest part, Timory, is communication.
Communication. So communicating with your kids, using those filters, helping them to understand that pornography is wrong, using these incredible books, simple books, child-appropriate books that help kids to identify things that they shouldn't be exposed to so that you are ahead of the game before exposure. Remember, first exposure we're seeing is really most commonly at the age of 8 years old. And so I really want to encourage you to check out Integrity Restored as a fantastic resource. And just coming to this filtration software, Jim, because I think it's so important. You mentioned Net Nanny, which is a new one I've not heard before, but also Covenant Eyes. Why wouldn't we make the jump, the leap, to do what we can to help protect kids? There was a scandal that came out just a couple weeks ago as well beyond the United Nations. Can you speak briefly to this, Jim, having to do with how the school programs that kids have in school was actually giving them pornography? I don't think we've discussed this. Can you share a little bit about that?
We have not, yes. That was a horrible thing. It's a for-profit company whose primary business model is selling software to schools. And in that software was embedded many, many links to pornographic sites.
For what ages?
Well, that's the problem, right? So their product starts at kindergarten and goes all the way through 12th grade.
Oof.
And so depending on what subject, what topic the kid was searching for, you know, they could find something as innocuous as just a nude Greek statue or an orgy. Mm. And so here's the thing that parents can do. And if you go to Covenant Eyes right now, and you sign up and you type in Integrity 30, you will get a free 30-day subscription to try it out in your family. And it's really throughout the pornography, Timory. More importantly, it sends the parents an accountability report. Mm-hmm. So you can know every site your child is going to, and they're going to rank them red, yellow, or green. Mm-hmm. If they're yellow or red, you know you need to have that conversation.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think that this is what's so important. You have the accountability, you have the information, you have the data, you have the open conversations, the books. This is so important. You can't trust your schools. You can't trust the programming companies they partner with. Why? Because pornography has become a massive, massive industry of making money, and the schools have partnered with them. And this is the reality. You have to be that first line defender and protector of your kids. And don't just be defensive. Go on the offense.
That's
for your
correct.
Kids.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, how many school districts have partnered with Planned Parenthood to provide the sex education curriculum for the schools?
Right. Right.
You know, we have to be the ones. No.
Yeah, it's not getting better.
And really, our kids will respond to the education that we give them as long as we don't make it strictly a moral issue.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Amen. Jim from Concord, California called and he said, anytime he's tempted with pornography, he prays a Hail Mary. And I think this is the other dimension that you and I discuss often, Jim. That is, when you're struggling with pornography, if this is something you're struggling with now, you need a multifaceted approach. Filtration software, therapy, pornography, counseling. IntegrityRestore.com is an incredible resource because they also emphasize the importance of faith and how our faith is so important. With God, all things are possible, but also God gave us human bodies and human gifts and talents to help overcome these addictions. So please check out Jim O'Day's work, IntegrityRestore.com, if you're struggling with a pornography addiction. You mentioned how people can obtain covenant eyes. Can you share that one more time, and we'll share the information in the show notes for the podcast?
Sure. We've set up a promotion code with Covenant Eyes. It's Integrity30. So when you go to sign up, they'll ask you for a promotion code at covenanteyes.com. And if you type in Integrity30, you'll receive a free 30-day subscription to try out the product for your family.
Space or no space?
No space. Integrity 30.
Integrity 30.
Integrity number 30. Integrity
number 30. And we'll post a link to Covenant Eyes as well as that code as well. But please, do yourself a favor. Start with a free 30-day trial. You get a head start. Protect your home. Protect your family. Protect your spouse. Help to bring this conversation of fidelity within your marriage and purity with your kids to the forefront. And even if you're not married, it doesn't matter. We need this in a culture that is dehumanizing us and really destroying our faith. That's Jim O'Day, the Executive Director of Integrity Restored. Check them out at IntegrityRestored.com. I'll be right back. I want to hear from you, though. Give me a call. The number's 1-888-914-9149. How did you get, or do you get, your babies to behave in church?
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Okay, share with me your wisdom. I shared at the beginning of the show, got a baby. She's almost 6 months now, and she loves to sing in church. If anyone else is singing, she wants to sing. And if anyone is talking, she wants to talk. And she's discovered the acoustics in the church are fantastic for hearing her own voice. So much so, she sang the Alleluia louder than anyone in the church, including Father, with a microphone. So much so, he was laughing during Mass and talked about her in his homily. So, throwing the question out there. Talking, chit-chatting is one thing. I tried to, you know, bear through it. You know, she doesn't understand yet that she can't talk and sing too loud in mass. And that's really been the challenge. So I want to hear your thoughts. How do you get your kids to behave, especially the babies, to behave in church? The number is 1-888-914-9149. Or you can comment on Instagram. We have Mary calling from California. Mary, welcome to Trending.
Oh, hi, Timory. What I was doing when my kids were small, you're welcome, is I would talk to them before Mass, and I would tell them how important it was for them to be good during Mass because they were going to be in the presence of God the Father and Jesus and all the saints, and they really needed to behave during Mass. And as long as I had that conversation ahead of time, they were really good. But if I didn't, especially the two little ones, were a little terrors. So that's what I would do.
Thank you so much, Mary from California. It's incredible for us to understand and see, I think, good examples. And talking to your kids, tell them to behave. This is something that my mom always said to do as well. She would say, make sure that you talk to your kids. Give them a good talking to. And you know what? My youngest sister was a stinker in church. Oh, goodness. We could tell hilarious stories about her. But, you know, isn't it interesting that some of the themes I've been seeing is setting a good example for your kids by how you behave in church and how you expect them to behave in church. And I see this from anywhere from talking to your kids about behaving in Mass to some who choose to sit closer to the front and really, you know, show their kids you're going to pay attention and that's Jesus and continue to emphasize where they're at in the proper context. You know, I think this almost comes back to that whole conversation of modesty too, in the sense that we've gotten confused about how we're supposed to dress for particular occasions and we kind of wear the same thing to everything. Well, similarly with kids from a young age, how you interact and how you behave should be determined based on the contextual situation you're in. The things you might do at home, jumping on the couch with your shoes on, eating and walking around the house as a little kid isn't something you should do when you're at someone else's house. You can trash their couch, trash their home. Well, with Mass, the same thing. This isn't the time to just talk whenever you want and have things to say as you wish. We had another caller off air call in and share that I was at Mass and I saw a grandmother pull out a white piece of bread for her granddaughter right before Mass. So she was settled and she had her own bread. I think this is hilarious. Do we know how old this kid was? Was there any comment? Oh man, I wish the person was alive. That is fantastic. The kid just wants to participate. Oh, that's adorable. Again, it's that whole debate over food and Mass. So many people have commented online, especially on Instagram, and many people have, for the most part, said they didn't go for the cry room. A few people have commented that they had, but most people try to stick it out, helping to have their children behave while inside the church. And I'm seeing a lot of responses from John to Mary to May to Claudia and others talking about helping them to sit quietly before Mass, maybe even separating some children in church if that's necessary for a time. Especially Claudia commented they had twins and so her and her husband had to separate the twins in order to help them behave better. A lot of people have said really focus on having good toys that are Catholic toys that they only play with during church. So it's their time to participate in a special way that's age appropriate for them in church that they can understand on the level that they can understand. Oh, this one cracks me up. My kids don't behave. And she put a prayer emoji and a crying emoji. I'm praying for you. That is a challenge. And this is a reminder for all of us to be the patient people when someone else's kid is truly being a terrorist in Mass. Because it happens. It could be your kid. It maybe was your kid one day. But at the parish we go to, you know, my husband and I have, you know, kind of the approach to try and, like, since my baby's really just talking and singing. There have been moments where she'd wanted to scream, but it's really talking and singing too loud. I've been trying to just get her to be quiet and participate and just look at what's going on. And But he, you know, he just wants to take the baby out. He doesn't want to disrupt anyone. And I get that as well. And I think it's important not to leave your kid just disrupting the whole congregation. But our pastor, along with a lot of other priests, will often say, don't take the babies out. I want them in. In fact, the other day at church when the baby was talking yet again during daily mass, the priests made it right after mass, came directly over to my baby girl and I, and he said, it is so good to hear young life in church. And I laughed and I said, thank you for the patience, Father. And he said, no, it's fantastic to have young, new life is excellent and everyone should appreciate that. So I appreciated that my child wasn't screaming, but I think that it's important to see that many priests and many people do appreciate hearing and seeing your baby there. They don't want, of course, hear your child misbehaving, but if you really are trying, and if people can actually hear over the talking and the chit-chatting, I think that that's very important to understand that it's okay. And that's why so many of my friends who have come with me to church or have converted to Catholicism from being Protestant have said, I love the Catholics because they want the kids to be a part of Mass. They're not trying to send them away. And they acknowledge that, hey, your kid's crying a little bit, that's okay. As Lucas commented and so many people have said, a parish that isn't crying is a parish that is dying. And it's true. And I think that sometimes that's why people do need the hope, especially, you know, living in California, we've seen fewer and fewer children over the years. I remember there's this one parish where the kids were always so rambunctious and loud, and I finally realized it's because a lot of the parents were sitting in this like back side area where my husband and I always sat. And I finally said, okay, I know you don't like sitting closer to the front, but if we want to be able to hear better in church, maybe we need to sit somewhere else where we're not where all the families are. And so that might be another perspective. If you're someone who's struggling because their kids in church, sit somewhere else. If you see the little terrorists coming to your pew, move. It's okay, even if it's in the middle of Mass. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. It's great to be with you. One question that we have asked and I want to talk about is, how addictive is social media really? I think this falls on the heels of conversations surrounding pornography, and it's really leading to a question that many researchers all the way up to Yale, Stanford, and many other schools are saying, do we need a regulator when it comes to social media? Well, why would they ask that? Well, this article from Yale is emphasizing how really social media isn't just a time sucker. It's actually addictive. Now, medical professionals really delayed in acknowledging social media, pornography, gambling, and video gaming as addictions because it wasn't something that people consumed. Instead, it was something that, well, people create their own chemical cocktail by the way they react and interact with external things such as social media, pornography, gambling, and video gaming. And so now, medical professionals, as well as due to much of the neuroscience, as we were discussing with Jim O'Day from Integrity Restore just a few minutes ago, has really pointed to the fact that the brain is being hijacked. And it's based on your behavior and choices you're making with regard to social media. You see, these features built in from everything from Amazon Prime, Netflix, and Hulu with autoplay, or even the autoplay that's occurring when you scroll through your newsfeed and immediately videos start moving before your eyes, along with a like and comment system, all of these things are meant to produce a particular behavior outcome. What's happening is we're seeing social media has the goal of behavior modification, but they're modifying your behavior to achieve an outcome they wish. Which, remember, social media is free to us, but it's not really free because the way social media is funded is through dollars and cents of how much time you spend there so that they can monitor your behavior and then also provide advertisements to you, targeted advertisements based on your clicks, likes, and interactions. And so really, I think the big picture in this massive digital space is to think about this. As people start talking about antitrust enforcement and various regulators in terms of social media, I found it really fascinating in this Yale article that I was reading, where it talked about how cars were considered dangerous. So eventually they were given speed limits, driver's license, seat belts were required. Do you know seat belts are really something that's only been required? Really wasn't required during Generation X when they were growing up and is now required from Generation Y as they were children growing up into the next generations. And we've seen all these regulations on cars, but here's the difference between a car and social media. A car is dangerous and has been regulated. But still, the human person has free will and can do what they want. Sure, they might get a ticket, they might get to a car accident, but here's the difference with social media. Social media in and of itself isn't an object the way a car is. And so the types of regulations put on social media are radically different from a physical object such as a car. Now, Grant, you can throw your cell phone out, you could go back to a flip phone or a call-only phone, which there are options like that, but it brings us back to this understanding. If social media makes its money based on social behaviors, data, and ultimately your behavior modification for them to have you produce a particular outcome to purchase and respond to those ads that they're giving you, then how are we going to change the tide and choose the type of behavior modification transformation in our own lives and to cut back on social media? Number one, delete what isn't necessary. Number two, set timers. And number three, turn off all those notifications. Those are three really simple ways to cut down on social media use. As well as remember, I always propose the black and white challenge. Get rid of color on your screens. It makes a big difference in terms of our response and our chemical reaction to notifications and interaction on social media. I'll be back with you tomorrow taking your questions with marriage and family therapist Michael Gasparo around Pride Month.